You know what sounds beautiful? Minnesota. You know what else is beautiful? Knowing that the lottery has generated billions of dollars for our state. Money that has gone to help protect wildlife and habitat and improve our air and water quality. At the Minnesota Lottery, we're playing our part. You can too. Just say, I'm in.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota Bound podcast, the stories behind the stories. I'm Laura Shera, and I am happy to announce that I have a duo host with me today. Dad, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Let's see. I'm Ron, Laura's dad, and proud of it. The last time we were together, I was telling you everything I know about turkeys.
That's correct.
And
turkey calling.
Yes, and I'm not sure if I know anymore, but what are we going to talk about today?
Well, today we are going to talk about storytelling, and I think you know a little bit about that.
I do.
You recently, which is really exciting, and I just got my copy, you wrote a new book.
Yes. Well,
before we get to that,
yes,
I just want to do a quick thank you to our sponsors for today.
Of course.
We want to give a warm welcome to Voyager's Sauna, also to Oreo and Ritz, Connecticut, Minnesota DNR, Minnesota Propane, Realtor Heather Womack, and the Minnesota Lottery. So, Dad, tell us why you decided to write a new book. You have a few under your belt now.
Well, this came about by accident, just about like anything else I've ever done. The TV show came about by accident. My turkey camp in the Black Hills came out by accident. But as you know, Laura, I have been writing for a half a century. Most of it, the bulk of it, at the Star Tribune, and starting with the fact it was just the Tribune a long time ago, wrote my first story in the newspaper in January of 1968. You weren't even a glint in my eye at that point. And so I've been writing all that time for close to 30 years. Then, of course, doing TV scripts, and then I do some freelance writing for magazines once in a while, not too often. But anyway, I enjoy writing. My assistant, Kelly, happened to mention to some folks with the Minnesota Historical Society, asking them, have they ever considered having me do a book? And they said, well, no, what could it be? Well, what happened was when the Star Tribune building on Portland Avenue, where I spent my career, was going to be torn down for the U.S. Bank Stadium and all that stuff, the newspaper for all those years had a library system where everything you wrote was clipped out of the newspaper and put in a little envelope with your name on it and the month and whatever. And I got a call one day from the library just before the building was going to be torn down, and they said, Mr. Shera, we have a couple of cardboard boxes of all your stuff here. If you want it, you can come pick it up. If you don't, it's going in the trash. And I thought, well, I'm vain enough. I can't throw my stuff out.
Let's be honest, how many boxes were there
it was
after
couple,
all those years?
A couple boxes, but they're little envelopes, you know, so you could put a lot in. Anyway, I brought them home, and like everybody else with good intentions, I put them in the basement where they sat for more years. So, and then this came along with the Minnesota Historical Society saying, well, yeah, what? Give us some samples. So we sent some samples of my writing there, and they liked it, and so there and started. So they sent a contract, and what I had to do then was sit down. This was good during COVID. Sit down and open up every one of those envelopes. Some of them had been stored for a long time, mildew or whatever, old newspaper clippings. You know, you looked in the box, you wondered what else was living in there, stuff like that. But I pulled them out and. I started reading the clippings, and some were, you know, like, hey, the deer season's going to open tomorrow, da-da-da-da, or the Ducks Unlimited banquet's going to be held. But others were, I thought, entertaining to me to reread them, and I thought they would stand the test of time. So I set those aside and went through all of them, threw out a whole bunch, but kept those. And then I got lucky again. We reached out. Here's my problem. I had all of these columns in hard copies, newspaper, folded up newspaper clippings. And I had to somehow get those into a digital format so I could edit them, tweak them, whatever. And the Anoka Library, a lady named Linda Potthoff, figured out a way to take those clippings and make them into digital and sent them to me. And it took several weeks to do this. It was a lot of them, you know. And so then I started tweaking, throwing some out, keeping some. And then I had, of course, an editor at the Minnesota Historical Society who looked at it all and suggested this, suggested that. So that's how it all came about.
We should tell our listeners, what's the title of your book?
Well, it's called Ron Shera's Minnesota. I like this part now. Mostly true tales of a life outdoors.
Are you saying that's how you've lived your life through the outdoors most of this time? Mostly true tales of your storytelling?
Well, you know, a writer's allowed to embellish, Laura. And I've taken that choice a few times. But mostly they're basically true stories.
They are true stories. And this book is hot off the press. I was just given a copy. Thank you for sharing.
Should have charged you.
Yes, he should have charged me just a couple days ago. And so I just started reading a lot of these short stories and articles. And I'm learning, you know, being your daughter for all these years, I'm learning new things about you. And what I love what you've done with the book is you've laid it out from hunting and conservation stories, stories about wild bird songs, some of the fishing adventures you've had, deer hunting, and of course some tales of all the hunting dogs. That one was a little tough to read. There was a couple tears shed reading about, of course, the ravens and Kyla.
Yeah.
Of course, I remember her well too. And some stories about my sister and I, of course, learning to navigate the wild wilderness at a young age when, you know, weather and bugs and things weren't always on your side. So, you know, what some of the couple of the stories that, you know, that stood out to me that I thought were really interesting are of one of which was you were turkey hunting and a coyote came to visit you.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to share with our listeners a little short version of that and how we found that interesting that day and what the coyote decided to do?
Well, I've had several coyotes visit me, so I'm unclear about which episode you're talking about.
There was one where you were turkey hunting and a coyote started to get really close to you.
Yes.
And he decided, that I think you even were trying to scare him off with a loud voice or something at that point, but he turned around and sat right next to you.
Yes.
And you both were turkey hunting together.
I remember that one because I called in, was turkey hunting over the St. Croix River area there by Taylor's Falls, and was calling like a hen, and I like to tuck myself into brush piles, and I put a mask on and using my slate and sounding great like a hen, and across the draw comes these two coyotes running right towards me. And they were looking for this hen. And standing around looking, wondering, where is she? We heard her here. And, of course, then I shut up. And the smaller of the coyote, which I think was the female, kind of, she's looking. She came around, got a little bit downwind of me, and got my scent and skedaddled. Now, the bigger coyote, he didn't know why she left, but he's still looking for this hen. And now he's not 10 yards away from me, kind of just looking around. And then I started playing with his mind a little bit. I would squeak again with my slate, barely moving my fingers. And he didn't know what that was. And then he eventually actually sat down with his back to me, not 6 yards away from me, sat down with his back to me. He's looking down this valley the same way I am. We're both waiting for some turkeys. So then he got tired of looking, and then he got up and kind of walked over to a tree, and I thought, well, I'm going to see what happens now. So I said, without moving, I said, you better get out of here or you're going to get in trouble. And he never even responded to this. He just didn't even know what that was. I thought, well, that maybe he had never heard a human voice before.
Probably not.
Yeah. And so only until I started to move in that and make this move, try to, you know, kind of just going to stand up, that he took off. I think he's still running.
He's like, what is that?
Exactly.
And you've had some other interesting encounters with wildlife and wild animals, including, you know, a mountain lion sighting when you were turkey hunting.
Oh, yeah.
But one that really sticks out is you had a really interesting and scary experience with a white-tailed buck.
Yes.
Here.
You did not know? You didn't know
I did know about it, but I had to read, I mean, I remember you talking about it when I was young.
Yeah.
But reading the story was, you know, obviously a reminder that.
Right.
Well, that was rare, but it can happen.
Well, it was an odd deal. I'm not going to ruin the story, but to make a long story short, it was the day before I was archery deer season, and my friend Jim and I were walking through the woods, and we see this buck deer, and he's whipping up a sapling, you know, getting some of the velvet off his antlers, which is the natural thing to do. But now we walk up, and he stands there just looking at us. He's about 30, 40 yards away, and he doesn't seem to care. And my partner, Jim, who had never seen a wild deer before, says to me, can you make him run? I go, well, usually that's not a problem. So I start walking towards the deer, and he doesn't run. He doesn't run. And anyway, I walk up near him. He walks down towards me real nonchalantly and gets his head through a dilapidated barbed wire fence and then realizes that he's got his head through there and we're about 5 yards apart and he goes, I'm gonna take you on, because he was in the rut. He was and he took me on. He hit me, lifted me up, took me down the hill into a tree, blah blah blah, and I grabbed his antlers in a death grip. And anyway, we got on the ground. Jim came down with a hatchet, tried to do something to the deer. The deer wanted to get up, so I let him go, and he went away. And by the way, a couple days later, he was shot because, and here's the punchline. He was shot by a farmer because he came into the farmer's yard and was chasing the dog around. This deer had been raised as a pet.
Oh.
And he was 2.5 years old, and he was feeling his testosterone. His neck was swollen, and he was ready to fight anything, including humans, dogs, whatever. And he had been a pet. The Iowa DNR got a call from the farmer who had him as a pet, said, you got to come get this deer because he's punching holes in my cows. He was just wanting to fight anybody. And so they came and got him, and they looked at him and said, well, they were going to butcher him and feed him to some wolves in an Iowa wildlife exhibit, but they said, ah, it's a nice deer. We're going to let him go in this woods. Unbeknown to us, it's a public woods, unbeknown to us, and we came across him. Actually, the afternoon they let him go. And when he saw me, he said, oh, well, let's see what
you're
made
of. You're an easy target.
You're an easy target. Anyway, so there's a lesson there.
Sure is.
About pet deer. They don't make good pets, especially bucks and even does. I've seen does reach out with their hooves and they could open your skull really easy. It's their defensive mechanism. They've opened many wolf skulls doing that. And I do know the story of a Minnesota taxidermist who had a pet deer because he wanted to use it as a model. And he went into that pen on a September or October day and he never came out alive. So they can be very dangerous. Anyway, so I thought you were going to talk about all the ugly mail I got from animal rights people because I hunted. So
I haven't gotten to that chapter.
Oh yes. A lot of people look forward to the hunting seasons. I cringed because I'd write about hunting and everybody thought I was the most evil person.
Well, I think you know what's a blessing about that and interesting is as you continue to teach the circle of life and the sportsmanship of hunting and why we hunt and the conservation efforts that are made through hunting, that viewpoint has changed tremendously from just, you know, 20, 30 years ago to today.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I was always puzzled by people who wanted to, who protested fur, using fur coats, fur around your neck or whatever, and not protesting leather shoes or leather coats. And the only difference between the two is they're both leather. One has hair on it yet, and the other does not. So I raised the question, I wonder if the Hereford thinks its life is less valuable than that of a mink because we don't seem to give a dang if we wear the Hereford's skin, but we seem to be all upset if we wear the mink's skin.
Well, that probably got you some hate mail.
It did.
Just going to go out on a limb there and say that might have sent a letter or two come flying. And, you know, I want to talk about some of the interesting characters and people that you've had the chance to spend some time with over the years.
Oh,
and,
my, yes.
Before we get there, we want to give a thank to Voyager Sauna.
So it's time to welcome our newest sponsor to the Minnesota Bound podcast. No doubt the world has been a crazy place lately. Busy work schedules, kids, coaching, travel. It all sometimes feels just too much. But you know what? I found my way to take some time and truly get away. I do it with our new Voyager Sauna. Voyager builds custom saunas for your home, backyard, and business, and they are the only company building premier mobile units. They're on wheels. They are units that go anywhere you go. It's the pick of the Shirk family. Clear grade cedar benches, spray foam insulation, Kuma wood-fired stoves, or Hilo electric heaters, Finnish-influenced hand-built saunas that will last a lifetime. Constructed with care by the hometown Voyagers team. My wife and boys, believe me, they love our new mobile sauna. Voyager, a Minnesota movement influenced by Finnish culture. Visit voyagerssaunas.com and get ready to distress. Trust me, it works.
Did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy right now. We also want to thank Realtor Heather Womack.
Hi, Minnesota Bound podcast listeners. I'm Realtor Heather Womack. As a young girl, I grew up in a duck blind hunting with my dad. I spent winter skiing at Highland Hills and Afton Alps and enjoyed summers hiking in all our beautiful parks. I grew up in Minnesota, moved to Europe for work, and returned to raise a family. Now my kids love the outdoor activities we have here. As a realtor, I've helped hundreds of folks buy their first home, sell the home they have, purchase a lake cabin, or start investing in Minnesota real estate. If you love adventure but need some new scenery, call me. My website is heatherwomackrealty.com. That's Heather Womack, W-O-M-A-C-K, realty.com.
All right, Dad, you have had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with really interesting people in fishing boats and hunting blinds and all sorts of things. And one story that, of course, sticks out, and it's he has made quite an impact, and the movie has made quite an impact on a lot of people, is you went fishing with Jack Lemmon, who starred in the movie Grumpy Old Man.
I did.
What was that like?
Well, it was obviously, I was flattered to be picked to take him fishing, and he was in St. Paul filming the Grumpy Old Man movie. And I probably would have preferred to have Margaret instead, but, you know, I had no choice there. But, and he had his son with him, his adult son. And what was interesting to me is Jack, as we chatted, he was very amiable, very common, and he likes fishing. He wasn't just doing that to be doing something. He liked fishing, and his son also likes fishing mostly in California, but they had never fished in Minnesota before. and he wanted to catch a muskie, or thought about it. And so we went fishing. We weren't fishing for muskie. We were throwing a spinnerbait and a few other things for bass. And the other thing that you knew, Jack is a bigger than life in the movies and a very funny guy. And he was a very funny guy. In the boat, in the back of the boat, he was as common as a house mouse. He wasn't funny. He didn't jibber-jabber very much. If you ask him a question, he gracefully answered it.
It's kind of like you in the fishing boat.
It's true. You can't.
My dad says very few words while fishing, everybody.
Well, you got to concentrate.
Yeah.
You know,
we're not even allowed to have music in the boat either. But anyway,
right.
Back to our story.
Breaks your concentration. Anyway, but he was very delightful, and he did catch a bass, and his son of all things, and this little lake had some tiny muskies in it, and the son caught one, probably just 30 inches or so, but it was very exciting. And that was the extent of it. But he was very gracious. I got a nice picture of him with me, and just another fond memory.
Definitely. And I, when the Super Bowl was in Minneapolis in 2018, just a couple years ago, I had the pleasure of hanging out on Lake Minnetonka with a bunch of people who wanted to try ice fishing for the very first time, all of which were out of town, including Ellen DeGeneres, I think, was out there, and you know, quite a few celebrities wanted to give it a try, and Lord Fletcher's was helping set all this up, so they wanted me to come out and kind of hang out with some of the people. And they had, as you can imagine, all of the ice fishing houses that had fireplaces, TVs, bars, refrigerators, all of these things all set up. And I would say over 50% of the people that wanted to try ice fishing wanted to sit on a plastic bucket outside and drop a line down an ice hole because of this movie, Grumpy Old Men.
Uh-huh.
And that's the experience they wanted to have. They did not want that warm ice house. So the impact that, you know, he had and the movie had, and how many years later people are still remembering that moment of how can someone sit on the ice and freeze and wait for a bite on the end of their line. And I thought that was really interesting.
It is interesting. This story is not in the book, but one time on Mille Lacs, myself and a few friends, they said, come on, Ron, there's plenty of ice. So we went out by snowmobile, and we got out there. Lo and behold, we had all of 4 inches of ice, which is not enough for me. But anyway, we're already out there, and keep looking over a couple hundred yards. There's a guy sitting on a bucket, just like you said, and he's not moving. And so, you know, being a newspaper guy I am, I decided to wander over there and strike up a conversation. And so I did, and I said to the guy, I said, my, I said, I've been watching you. You haven't moved. And how can you sit so long? How can you sit so long? And he looked up at me. He was an older guy. He says, well, this is how I work it. This is how I work it, he said. I imagine I'm looking at a giant martini, and my bobber is the olive.
He's like, I could stare at that for hours.
Exactly.
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. You never know when the fish is going to bite at the end of your line that keeps you going. And speaking of keeping you going, the fish of 10,000 casts, muskie fishing.
Yes.
If you are a muskie fisherman, you know what that means.
It's addictive.
It is addictive. It is basically, I always equate it to playing a slot machine. You know, it's just one more pull of the slot to see if you're going to be a winner or not.
One more cast.
And you have a quote in here that I really, really liked. And you were talking about the eternal side to pursuit of angling in general. And why do people fish? And, you know, you had mentioned fishing being a great teacher of patience.
Oh, yes.
And being humbled.
Easy.
Yes. And many times we feel more for the one that got away than ever we did for the trophy fish that landed in our boat.
Oh, yeah. That's very painful to lose one.
It is.
There's joy in catching one, but there's pain in losing one.
It's almost worse because you think you see a glimpse of it and it's huge and there it goes.
I know.
And you remember it forever. But what you did say I thought was great, or what you did right, it said, you're never too young to start and you're never too old to quit. And I think that's, you know, a wonderful thing because it's always available to you to try something new if you haven't been fishing. It's never too late to catch a muskie if it's always been on your list to do.
Yes.
And you said, as long as I can bait a hook and make a cast, and as long as I'm living, I'll be fishing.
Yes, indeed. You know, I thought about that many times. I don't know if I wrote this in the book or not, but, you know, my high school, we didn't have golf. We didn't have tennis in my high school, but we had the usual football, basketball, baseball, etc. And my school taught me these sports. But my dad and my mother taught me fishing and introduced me to squirrel hunting, introduced me to honey morel mushrooms, introduced me to looking for walnuts in the fall from walnut trees. And I started thinking that as I got out of high school, et cetera, and got a little fatter and older, the only things I can do today are the things my parents taught me. I can't do anything that my school taught me. That doesn't mean schools are bad, but it means to me that schools ought to be teaching more lifetime sports. That's that simple.
That's true. Well, they do teach golf.
I know. That shows you how damn old I am.
They didn't have golf back then when you were
No, I don't think they school. Just invented it in Scotland or something like that.
Yes.
Do we have to take another?
We do. Let's take another quick break, and then I want to wrap up our conversation with the word storytelling in general. So we know both, Dad, you and I can both talk about Connecticut water. You and I have been drinking Connecticut water for years now. And of course, it was installed in your house first, and I had to come steal glasses of water all the time. But Connecticut water, you know, is an amazing drinking water system. That's what I have, so that's what I can speak to, that not only takes all the contaminants out of water, it gets rid of the chlorine. I actually added the mineral filter back in, so I get all those healthy minerals, and the water tastes great. And, you know, Dad, I know you and I are always working on our water consumption and how much water we're intaking during the day and how important that is, especially during the summer, when you're out on the boat fishing, you need to make sure that you're drinking a lot of water outside. And Connecticut water, because it tastes so good, of course, allows us to drink more. So thank you for Connecticut water for all that you do. And for more information, you can go to Connecticut.com.
Make sure you tune in to Minnesota Bound this Saturday at 6:30. We showcase Minnesotans making a difference, supported by the Minnesota Lottery. You'll learn about Women on the Fly, an organization that teaches women to fly fish, and you'll see the beauty and serenity of being on the river.
Also, thank you to Nabisco, Oreo, and Ritz.
Today is a day for adventure. Cub has all the Nabisco snacks you need to make sure adventure is delicious from start to finish. Life just tastes sweeter when you share Oreo cookies on the trail, when you crunch Ritz crackers at the campsite, or rock the boat with Ritz cheese crispers. Stop a Cub on the way to your adventure. The great outdoors is calling. Don't forget your snacks.
Minnesota's wildlife management areas are a vast array of lands across all of Minnesota. These 1,440 wildlife management areas are valued for wildlife and Minnesota's outdoor recreation opportunities. Annually, the DNR helps maintain hunter walking trails, they plant food plots for wildlife, and develop acres and acres of prairie and grasslands. To find out more about Minnesota's wildlife management areas, go to mndnr.gov/WMAS. Okay, for those of you just catching up, we are chatting with my dad, Ron Shera, today about his brand new book, Ron Shera's Minnesota, Mostly True Tales of Life Outdoors. And the book just came out a couple weeks ago. And this book is compiled of a bunch of short stories.
It's great for sitting on the stool. You know, you can just read a chapter or two.
Is that what you're advertising it?
Yeah, well, it's a bathroom edition.
Well, and if you run out of toilet paper, there's a lot of paper.
We're not going there. Not on my watch.
I just want to say the book starts out, and this is what's going to be the catch and why people are going to purchase this book. It says, "I was born at a very young age."
I've wanted to use that line for a long time.
One thing the outdoors does for all of us, whether you're hunting, fishing, hiking, canoeing, whatever you're doing, is it allows you to be a storyteller. And you and I have had this conversation before about how storytelling is truly in our DNA and how cavemen,
they wrote stories on the wall.
That's right. They did. And they sat around sharing their hunting stories through that version. And we still do that today. And,
That was the secret, I think, of Minnesota Bound, because I started that way, and that Minnesota Bound was going to be a storytelling show versus some other outdoor shows that just showed you how to catch 15 bass in 20 minutes, you know, as if you needed to see that many. And I used to tell staff, and when we were kids, your mom would come in, maybe sit down on the bed at nighttime and say, "I want to read you a story." Or your kindergarten teacher would say, "I want to read you a story." We are people engrossed by stories, and same with television stories. So I was a big fan of 60 Minutes, 2020, those stories, and just said Minnesota Bound is going to be like that. But my grandpa Dickens, Clayton Dickens, I love to sit on his lap. I miss him dearly, although he made it in about 93. But I was already out of Iowa by then, and I miss him dearly, but he was a storyteller. I'd sit on his lap, and he'd make up some dang story, and I was just mesmerized by it. And I credit him for being a storyteller.
There's some storytelling in our lineage of ancestry.
Well, I tried to check that out. You're talking about Dickens?
Charles Dickens, who wrote The Christmas Carol.
I know. I tried to find out if, because my grandpa was Clayton Dickens, and I tried to find out without much luck. But here's the segue. Charles Dickens' great-great-grandson came to St. Paul one time and read you could buy a ticket and go listen to it. He read The Christmas Carol. He was related to Charles Dickens.
Oh, wow.
So I went up to him and said, "Hey, we might be related." He was very interested. And I tried to explain to him a little bit about what I knew of the Dickens connection, but we couldn't find one. And so I don't know if we're related or not, but we can claim it.
Yeah, I say we go with that story. It's in our ancestry, our DNA. Charles Dickens.
Yeah, but I love to tell stories and... still do, because people like stories. So, and even about, I love, in the book, there's some stories about some critters, you know, the house wren and the chickadee and some other creatures that I have written about as a story. And just not making stuff up, but just doing some research, etc.
Well, you are an excellent storyteller, Dad, and writer, and I'm so thankful I've had you as a mentor to help me with my, writing and storytelling, and it is a learning curve, and you still today help me with a lot of my stories. I always pass them by you first before I go to track them.
Well, Laura, you're a natural, and here's the secret: the more writing you do, the better you get. If you pay attention and be your worst critic, here's what I do with scripts often. I'll write the script, and then I'll let it sit for a couple of days. And then I'll go back and read it to myself again and go, that's awkward. Why did I do this? Why did I do that? But listen, if you're worried about your inheritance, we have to tell people how they get this book. We haven't done so.
Yes, you're right. Well, I was just, still going through some of my favorite quotes in the book.
But you're mesmerized.
Yes, mesmerized by reliving some of the stories as a child going out with you in like the Boundary Waters and things. How can our listeners get your new book?
Well, I'm happy to say Amazon.com has it. They have everything. You can also go to outdoorcalendars.com. That's my website. And if you want an autographed version, you can ask for it there. We'll have them at the Minnesota State Fair. We'll have them at Game Fair in August. That's the extent of it at the moment. They're $19.95, I think. $18.95? What is it? $18.95?
$18.95.
Oh, I thought it was worth the $19.95 anyway. But anyway. Amazon.com is probably your best bet and quickest bet. But outdoorcalendars.com also has it. So appreciate any business there.
Absolutely. And if we have Game Fair this summer, I'm sure you'll be selling them there. And I assume you'll probably get these at the Minnesota State Fair at the Minnesota Bound Log Cabin.
Right.
Awesome. One of the favorite quotes, we'll close with this, that I found thus far in the book, in my reading, is one you wrote about North.
Oh, yes.
I thought this was beautiful. North is a magic direction. No matter where you live, there's a North. For generations, the simple idea of going North has been enough to lift the human spirit higher than any other direction. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Very well done. Thanks, Dad. Another fun podcast. I always enjoy these.
We could maybe make a career out of this.
Yeah, maybe. Someday we could try.
I haven't told you everything yet.
That's true. There's always more to learn. Always more to learn. Well, thank you for sharing your stories. And again, the book is Ron Shera's Minnesota, Mostly True Tales of Life Outdoors. Thank you for listening today. And once again, Dad, I'm going to have you say your famous last line that you've said for many years on Minnesota Bound, which is?
All of you listeners, remember, introduce a kid to the great outdoors.